You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, December 20th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the Republican tax scam all but secures final passage will happen today. The signing will probably take place by the end of the week, if not, well, probably by Friday. Meanwhile, underplayed and little-known highlights. Healthcare cut for 13 million. All those middle-class tax cuts go away within 8 years. Carried interest still remains, and the tax bill encourages companies to offshore their manufacturing. Tax scam and incompetence aside, reshaping the judiciary is probably Trump's 2017 lasting victory. Susan Collins has a not quite so Me Too moment. Is Trump trying to set up pardons? We will see. Meanwhile, in Virginia, the Virginia House of Delegates has potentially ended a 17-year Republican dominance because of one single solitary vote, which, as of an hour ago, apparently, appears to be being challenged. Even though the Republican Party in Virginia has conceded, the Republican who appears to have lost the race by one vote is challenging a vote. We're waiting on a court to make the determination in that case. New York City decarbonizes, or hopes to, the NYC pension fund. Over 9,000 civilians are now reported to have died in our fight with ISIS over Mosul. The EPA reverses and will allow us to use toxic chemicals in the name of freedom. And Uber gets hit in Europe. And the UK guarantees broadband in just 2 years for all its citizens. All that and more on today's program. Folks, what we're going to do today is sort of have the show that we would have if we did a Saturday show this week. As in, like, sort of, the vagaries of scheduling that they are. We're going to do, we're trying to do just sort of like a little bit of towards the end of 2017 type of, we're going to allow a little more phone calls, a little more IMs today. We have a guest tomorrow. And then on Friday, Cliff and I will wrap up the year. Film guy Matthew and Isabel will be here to give us some movie suggestions. But we figured we'd do it today. There's a decent amount of news, but nevertheless, want to allow people to call in. We'll probably take calls in about 20 minutes. So don't get too carried away. And
maybe you should try to call, Croc.
Let's not get that.
Fuck.
We'll also take some IMs as well. Just a reminder, this show relies on your support. You can go become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Last night, TMBS featured Adolph Reed and Will Menaker. You can check that out on iTunes or on YouTube. And, of course, on Patreon, you can get the special bonus stuff. All right, let's go right into this. The House has to vote again on the bill that they passed yesterday because there were, I think it was two or three provisions that were not bird rule compliant. And specifically, there were a couple provisions in there that did not specifically go to the financial difference for the United States government. So the parliamentarian was called to her attention by staffers on Bernie Sanders' committee. I think that's the banking committee and Wyden's committee. That's on finance. And they went to the parliamentarian. This is one of the underreported stories of the ACA, too, is that at one point Sanders folks went to the parliamentarian and argued to her that the bill was not bird rule compliant. They did it in this instance. All it does is make it a little bit more difficult or embarrassing for the Republicans at this point, but they fixed it. They're going to pass it. And the tax law is going to be law of the land. And look, you know, the people can argue as to whether or not it's going to help the economy to give tax breaks to corporations. You can argue that. You would have to be arguing that giving these tax breaks and basically giving away money to CEOs and board of directors so that they can buy back their shares.
Job creators.
Understand how this works, right? So they buy back, and Dayan took us through this, but they buy back their stocks. CEOs, board of directors, maybe other members of the C-suite, they get paid in part in salary and in part in stocks. And they get paid even more so in stocks because they know there's a tax advantage to that for them. Because the stocks, when they cash in their stocks, they're only going to be paying two-thirds taxes is from what they would be paying on their salary. So these are changes that Bill Lozanek outlined for us over the past couple of years. You can go back into our archives and listen to any interview that we've done with him because it's more than valuable. But then follow where this goes. They buy back their stocks. It raises the value of their stocks. We've seen a 25% plus jump in the stock market in the past year. Part of this is a function of getting rid of regulations. I mean, if you look at the for-profit universities, if you go and Google EFT for for-profit universities, you will see that they have actually doubled in value. And that, if you look at the trajectory of when it happens, here's November 7th, 2016. And on November 9th, 2016, their stock starts going up. Ascends in a way that it would almost be, you would, to climb that in a physical environment, you would need to be an expert mountain climber with pitons and hooks. It goes straight up because the enforcement mechanisms that the Obama administration was starting to put and to clamp down on this, basically the scam on taxpayers and on students who are stuck with that debt. They owe it to the U.S. government. It's all tax dollars. But the scam, you know, basically the announcement was when Donald Trump became president, hey, guess what? The power's out in this major city. Well, we're just going to let you know we're pulling all the cops off the beat. And on top of that, we're also opening up all the doors and taking all the merchandise from every place and putting it in the street. And we're not doing any controls on it. So feel free to walk away with it. Nevertheless, so what will also happen as the stock market continues to rise, and it will for a while, completely untethered from what the economy is, the real world economy, or the economy for the vast majority of people in this country. And remember, only about 10% of Americans have individual stocks. The rest of us, if we have stocks, it's a function of your union has a pension fund, or you work for a city and they have a pension fund, or your investment vehicle. It's a large fund. Only 10% have individual stocks. And the stock market goes up, and it's more often than not a retirement. So you're not, it doesn't have the liquidity it does for really wealthy people. So their value, their net worth goes up through the roof. And them buying a house and this and that, the idea that in some way, like the mortgage deduction is going to inhibit the real estate market is silly, of course, because we're talking about people with so much money that it's a rounding error. 4% of the people have a mortgage that's over $750,000. So they'll be fine. But what it will do is we'll continue to drive up the price of housing when you have the stock market going this big. It'll drive up the price of everything. So we're seeing basically all the problems that we have associated with wealth inequality will be magnified significantly. That $2,000 that the middle class, the average person that they're touting will have in terms of tax so-called relief, that of course expires after 8 years. All the other provisions for the top 1% who get 80% of the benefits, those do not expire. But that $2,000, the buying power of that $2,000 in a couple of years is not going to amount to very much. If you have this type of wealth inequality that is being hypercharged. On top of which, of course, you have 13 million Americans who are going to lose health insurance over the next years. Your premiums are going to go up, too, because the individual mandate has been dispensed with. And so younger, healthier people are going to leave risk pools and premiums are going to go up if you're involved in the exchanges, whatnot. So some of your $2,000, if you're getting $2,000, will go towards that over the course of the year. And then, of course, there's because of things like because of the way in which they're treating foreign-made profits, there is a slight incentive to build more factories overseas rather than the United States. It's complicated, but it basically comes down to if you have a factory and you make $1 million worth of profits, that is considered to be the sort of reasonable amount of profits. I don't think that's the actual term of art that they use, reasonable amount of profits. If you get over that, then there's an increase in the tax rate to repatriate that money. So there's going to be an incentive for people to just keep building more foreign manufacturing outlets so that they can have a reasonable return on all of those investments outside of the United States. I don't think it's going to be dramatic, but if there's any weight to what the new tax bill does in terms of returning money to the United States or returning manufacturing to the United States, that's the direction it goes. Here is Paul Ryan, who couldn't be happier, folks. Couldn't be happier, because this is also the part of the 1-2 punch with the Republicans, right? The first punch is we're going to expend all this money and give it to rich people. And then the second part of the punch is, oh my God, we're broke. We need to cut Social Security and Medicare.
The deficit. Now, I know that the theory is that if you have more tax growth, you get more revenues into the coffer, and that reduces the deficit. But let me just put a fine point on it. Are you saying that the growth you're going to get from this tax cut will equal the amount it would cost on the deficit side so that it's a wash, so that you're not adding to the deficit at all because of this?
Nobody knows the answer to that question because that's in the future. But what we do know is that this will increase economic growth. Here, let me say it this way, Savannah. People are living paycheck to paycheck in this country. More than half of the people are.
Now, pause it. Hold on. Before he gets into the BS without addressing the question. Now, I'll remind you, I don't care terribly about the deficit. I don't think it's a problem at all. But what Savannah Guthrie is doing there is she's saying, like, I know that you have talked about unicorns coming and dancing on all of our heads and pooping out ice cream and non-fattening ice cream. that we can just we can eat and not get fat. I know that you do, but are you suggesting that that's actually true? And Paul Ryan says, well, yeah, it's possible unicorns could come in the future and poop this ice cream that's not fattening, like we've been talking about for a long time. But it's in the future, so I can't be exactly sure about it. Even though we've seen...
Long time horizon.
We've seen in Kansas what happens when you cut taxes as to whether or not it expands the tax base and creates this boon of revenue. And the answer is no. There are no unicorns. Even if there were, they don't poop out ice cream that has no calories. And so Paul Ryan says, actually, Savannah, let me change the topic for a moment, if you will let me. And I'm going to make it sound like I actually care about human beings, as if I was a human being.
Living paycheck to paycheck in this country, more than half of the people are in this country. Another group of people in this country are about one check away from living paycheck to paycheck. We have not had a 3% growth economy since before the Great Recession in 2008. What that means is stagnant wages, flat living standards. You have to get faster economic growth so that people can get ahead in America. That's what we're doing.
Okay, first off, put aside for a moment as to why we haven't had this economic growth, and put aside for whether or not it's actually something that we want going forward when we have something like climate change hanging over our heads. The fact of the matter is that we've certainly had years of economic growth that have been at 3% over the past 30 or 40. The problem is not, that is not, the lack of economic growth is not why we have stagnant wages. The reason why we have stagnant wages is because of things like your tax plan, which funnels money that is developed through growth into the hands of fewer and fewer people. That is why we have stagnant wages across the board, because the profits that are being increased, the money that is being thrown off of increased productivity is going to a fewer and smaller subset of people. That is the problem there, which, of course, he avoids talking about. And now, of course, he's denying, well, we never said there was unicorns. We just said future. You can't tell. Maybe there are unicorns in the future. So that's Paul Ryan on that. Here is Paul Ryan on Good Morning America. Now, you understand, Paul Ryan's on this huge tour because since he was in college, all he could dream of was this idea of cutting taxes for wealthy people and cutting Social Security and Medicare. This is what they would hang out around the keg, where he would go to college because of Social Security, incidentally, because he was orphaned, his father died. And his one way of making sure that somehow he wasn't stigmatized by this, I guess, was to go out and lash out against other people who depend on Social Security down the road. And I should say, if he's really worried about those people living paycheck to paycheck, understand this. They're also not saving for their retirement. The only retirement they're going to have is Social Security, which you've already begun the process of cutting by trying to introduce this CPI, the change CPI measure of inflation, which hurts older people in particular. And once you try and adopt that with the way of calculating Social Security benefits. But here he is on Good Morning America touting this as a real boon to the people who get only 20% of the benefit, as opposed to the 1% who get 80% of the benefit of this bill.
And growing the economy. So this is our plan to grow the economy. And we are convinced this will grow the economy. All the scorekeepers say it will grow the economy. It's just a question of degree. But we need to keep focused on the spending side of the ledger as well. And so that to me is very important. And we're going to get back on that to make sure that we can get spending under control. But we have to have economic growth. We got to get people back to work in higher paying jobs. If people are working in higher paying jobs, they're paying more taxes. The economy benefits all overall. And so that's what this does. And so we're convinced this is one of the key ingredients to fiscal discipline. The other one, of course, being spending discipline.
And that spending has a lot of people concerned as well. The AARP has come out against the tax bill, in part because they say it's going to increase the national deficit. And that means $25 billion in cuts to Medicare next year alone. Those Medicare cuts are going to be triggered next
Not
month.
Not going to happen. I can just cut you off right there. You and I know these. I know you used to work here, so you know these budget rules. It's kind of an arcane rule that will not occur, and those cuts will not happen.
You're committed to getting to reversing those cuts.
Yeah, it's the PAYGO system, which is a rule, by the way, we never favored in the first place, and those cuts will not happen.
But are you ruling out any Medicare cuts throughout 2018? Because as you just said, you want to get spending under control, and for you, that's usually meant entitlements like Medicare.
We're going to fix the PAYGO problem, which is an arcane budget problem and budget rule. But do we want to get entitlement reform? Of course we do. But the kinds of entitlement reforms I think that we're going to be pursuing are the kinds that help make sure we get people from welfare to work. That's what really we're
focused on. So you're ruling out Medicare cuts next year?
Well, there are some provider issues that we may be addressing. As you know, some providers in the Medicare field, in some cases, are getting overpaid. Ooh. We want to make sure that that's being dealt with. But as far as you're talking about beneficiaries,
fraud, waste.
We're not focused on that. We're focused on getting people from welfare to work. We're focused on giving states more flexibility in Medicaid. Those are things that we think we can do to bring more savings to the budget. More importantly, to get people from welfare to work. And those are the kinds of things we're going to focus
on. So let me translate what's going on here. There are these PAYGO rules which say that if you add to the deficit, you get a cut from Medicare, and he's claiming that we're going to reverse that. We're not going to allow those cuts to go through. And Stephanopoulos says, "You sure you're not going to allow those cuts? You keep talking about entitlements." Well, George, to be honest with you, what we're going to do is we're going to start with poorer people. We're going to start with people living in poverty. So if you can't get a job and you don't have money to get food, let's say, or you don't have money for housing, or let's say you can't take care of your kids, what we're going to do is we're going to say, we know you can't get a job, and that's why you need this assistance. Well, to get this assistance, you're going to need a job. And then we have magic savings, of course, because that means that we don't have to fund those things. And look, we would never touch Medicare, at least before the 2018 election. We would never even articulate that we're going to do that. However, Medicaid, those are just people living in poverty. We know they don't vote that much, so we're going to continue to cut there. That's what that exchange was. But there was a little bit of more, like, you know, sort of brow and...
So arcane.
Arcane. I used arcane three times in that, George. So I get to cut food stamps for some children.
He's really feeling himself. You could tell. He's like, oh, man, now not only have I finally achieved my dream of, you know, massive wealth redistribution to the wealthy and increasing poverty and suffering, but I'd really like to get my brand as a policy wonk back.
Exactly.
It's only like the occasional idiot in the Washington Post who still actually takes that seriously, and I'd like to get that back out there.
You can almost see the wheels in his head going like, ha, that whole thing where I pretended like I was going to retire. That worked.
Exactly.
All right.
It's arcane, George. You know this. It's arcane. Involved too.
You and I.
Anyways, here's my point.
We're here.
Middle class people, sort of quasi, going to be protected. There's going to be a whole other round of Hunger Games in the
George,
poor next
we wouldn't
year,
think
I promise.
Of cutting middle class benefits until after the midterm election. Yeah. I think you know that.
You were in Washington.
We start with the poor people.
We spent our
time. We start with the poor people right
you
now.
You torture poor first. Then you torture and destroy the middle class. And then they become poor, and then you can torture them again.
Here is the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. His name is Kevin Brady. And, this is a problem because there was a lot of talk about cutting. And I think now President Trump used to talk about how disgusting it was, carried interest. Watch out for that carried interest. You guys, you hedge funders. Carried interest, hedge funders, what they do is they start a little business where they go around to all the wealthy people they know. Then they say, hey, put your money in my fund. I will get you 10% returns every year, let's say. We're going to do a fund where we invest in medical stuff or some other thing. And trust me, and I'll get you 10% returns. And the way you'll pay me is you're going to give me 2% of what you put into the fund. And then I get 20% of your net profits. I think they call it 220. I think that's what it is. And on that 20% profits that you get, we're going to pretend like that's my money that I invested, and we're going to pretend like we're investing it in something that's actually going to create something rather than it's just a bet. And therefore, that 20% of your profits that I get put in my pocket, that's not you paying me. That's me investing with your money. And therefore, I'm subject only to capital gains taxes on it, and I save 20%, 20 percentage points on my taxes. So this is just a fraud, right? I mean, even if you believed in the idea of we should treat money differently than work in terms of how we tax it. We should favor you already having money and get a lower tax rate because of that. Because theoretically, you're investing in machinery that is going to give somebody a job and whatnot. Even if we were to believe this, the idea that this applies in this situation is simply a joke. It's a joke. Donald Trump got some points on the campaign trail by talking about how much of a joke it was. And here is Kevin Brady. They've just done this massive tax overhaul. Where are we gonna find cuts in their tax? We're gonna roll back taxes on some people. We're gonna roll back some of these loopholes so that we can fund these taxes for wealthy people. But the thing is, if you're trying to roll back loopholes to fund tax cuts for wealthy people, of course you can't take the loopholes away from the wealthy people.
The president during the campaign said, quote, we're getting rid of carried interest. He said hedge fund managers are getting away with murder. This was one of his campaign pledges, to get rid of carried interest. It's still in there. I know you've extended the period that those have to be held by hedge fund managers to 3 years. But the truth, as you know, is that hedge fund managers and private equity hold things for much longer than 3 years anyway. So why is carried interest still in this bill? What's the benefit to the American people?
Yeah, so I think this is the perfect issue, the disconnect between Washington and New York and the American people. Look, that average family making $73,000 a year, I mean, both blue-collar workers, will see a tax cut of $2,059 in this tax bill. And for the first time, we're actually going to be competitive 31 years worldwide. Right. That's what Americans are really focused on. Look, carried interest, we can talk about that for the next hour if you'd like. But for most Americans, they could care less about that. They care about their paychecks and getting the economy going. And frankly, you know, I've got a college son as well, about making sure they have a good paying job when they're done with school.
Yeah. In other words, Willie, let me make this clear. We have thrown up a little bit of dust in the form of a couple extra bucks in paychecks that is going to last 5 or 6 years. Then it's going to fade away so that we can continue to provide that murder, like the president called it. And we could talk an hour for about murder, but as long as other people aren't getting murdered.
Doesn't the unpopularity of this bill show that maybe they do care a little bit more about that, the fact that like corporations and the wealthy are making a killing out of this despite this piddling amounts that they're going to save?
That's pretty funny, Matt. How's your Brooklyn apartment doing in New York?
It kind of puts the lie to the idea that they don't think people should get money for not working, right? Rich people are allowed to have as much passive income as they want. But, you know, when poor people need money for social reproduction, it's like, go fuck yourselves.
Right.
Social what?
Little lazy.
Yeah,
little
anyways,
lazy.
Your little, future child's going to grind lazy. It up into a health nutrition supplement, young lady. I think what I also love, though, about the New York game that they're playing is that New York has by far one of the highest concentrations of people in the country that actually is like... On one hand, it's like, yeah, New York, what do you know? And then on the other hand, it's like, this city is one of the only places in the world that has some concentration of people that will, in fact, benefit from this.
I would say like probably something like, I don't know, 60% of people who take advantage of the carried is from New York.
Well, yeah, and then there's
the
Connecticut.
Tri-state area.
Yeah, I'm thinking, because I'm being super literal here.
Right.
So I'm going to give them Connecticut, New Jersey, a couple of oil barons in
Texas.
That's
very, very New York of you to point out that there's a lot of people in New York getting away with murder off this. So New York. So Washington, New York, San Francisco.
That could lead to some good, funny, behind, like fundraiser humor. Just like, you New Yorkers, you're literally getting away with murder.
Calling from a 310 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
What's up, Sam? This is Adam from L.A.
Adam from L.A., what's on your mind?
Okay. Getting a lot of press.
Yeah, you got it.
Reuben Gate.
What's that?
Reuben Gate.
Rubengate.
And that's Dave Rubin has still blocked me.
Oh, I didn't realize that we had we had elevated that to a gate, the idea that Rubin had blocked you, but okay.
I'm hoping this can be the bombshell story of 2017, but I'm not sure. So I just want to keep everyone updated. So I'm just about to go into my second interview over at Yahoo, and I think I might be able to get the job. If I do, I'm going to circulate an internal memo that's a little misogynistic, borderline autistic, kind of explaining how me as a Jewish male is far more superior than anyone else in the office, and I'm getting shunned for it. So I'm hoping that after that, he'll let me get on his show. So I just want to put that out there. And in the meantime, if everyone wants to go on Twitter to Classically Miserable, they can go to my poll, and it is as such. The Nazis are horrible, and I don't support them in any way. But can we admit their outfits are awesome? A, yes. B, no. C, no, that's racist. Or D, if you just would have laughed at my stand-up, I don't have to give airtime to Nazis.
There you go.
There's that encapsulates Dave Rubin's entire career. Although, if you actually, I've watched a few clips, sadly, of Dave Rubin's stand-up, and I would not be the one to make the sacrifice to pretend that he was funny, if I'm being honest. And you know what was amazing with Dave Rubin? His whole stand-up was all identity politics. I saw his clip.
Oh, is that right?
He's all like, hey, this is a gay crowd, right? I was like, oh, that's so cheap and divisive. I can't believe you.
Wait, hold
say
on.
That.
Are you?
That is not an open. Why should that matter if you have a funny joke? Why would it matter that you're gay? It's horrible.
All right. Appreciate the call. Good luck with it. Calling from a 509 area code. Who's this?
Samuel.
Yes.
This is animatronic William Taft.
That's pretty exciting. You're the first animatronic past president that we've had on the show.
On behalf of all robotic presidents, I say thank you, kind sir, for receiving my telephonic outreach to your program. On yesterday's show, you suggested that here at the Hall of Presidents, we are looking down upon President Donald J. Trump with scorn or disgust. Samuel, old boy, nothing could be further from the truth.
Oh, really? I'm surprised to hear that.
Take me, for example. Samuel, I am the only president to ever serve on the Supreme Court. I continued the trust-smashing efforts of my predecessor, Theodore Roosevelt. I was a real badass.
Okay.
Yet school children around the country today laugh and scorn as they remember me simply as the fattest president of all time. The one who was lodged so tightly into the White House washtub that he could not be extracted. But 'tis so no longer. Children of tomorrow will laugh at President McSugartits. Yes, Sam.
Yes.
Nothing could make me happier than seeing his ill-fitted suit pants pulled all the way up to his ginormous man boobs.
Well, that's good. I guess so. There's an upside, you're saying, to having.
And Samuel,
yes.
I am not the only one. Robot Andrew Jackson was in a real rut before Trump came along. That Negro president was going to remove him from the $20 note and replace him with a woman, no less. He was becoming widely accepted as an enormous piece of human shit.
Yes. Well,
but now look at him, Samuel. His portrait hangs in the Oval Office. Brian Kilmeade, a man who can barely read, sits among the New York Times bestsellers with his glowing portrait of this genocidal maniac. He's back, baby.
Wow, I had no idea. Taft knew who Brian
And then there is President Kennedy. Samuel.
Yep.
President Kennedy is not looking at Trump with scorn, That look is pure, unadulterated envy.
Oh.
Do you know how exhausting it was for him to hide his many, many affairs and to pretend to be an average American family man and not a hardcore sex addict? John cannot believe that one can simply brag about being a disgusting, pussy-grabbing monster and still be president. Well, a real missed opportunity for young John Fitzgerald Kennedy.
Yes, of course. It sounds like it. Well, I stand.
Thank you for receiving my call.
Yes, well.
And enjoy your stay at Disney Resort.
Well, I'm not actually at the Disney Resort, but I appreciate that. I appreciate the correction. I appreciate the correction there. I was not. What's his favorite ride? I don't know. He's hung up.
He's already gone.
Can't even answer that question. Hey, I want to before we go back to the calls and do any more sound. I want to talk a little bit just briefly about what's going on in Puerto Rico. One of the things that we're doing with the fund, and hopefully by the beginning of the new year, I'll be able to do a full accounting of what we're doing with some of that GoFundMe money. But in addition to the Cernovich video, we're going to be donating some to Puerto Rico. And the latest coming out of there, and, you know, there's reports that they're 70%, they're up to 70% power. Understand that that 70% power does not describe the number of citizens who have power. It describes the generation of power relative to what it was pre-Hurricane Maria. So we don't know whether or not that power is actually reaching people. If your power line is down, it does not implicate the amount of power generation that is taking place. So the number of people without power is probably closer to 50% than it is to 30%. There's also about one third of the island's 425,000 homeowners are behind on their mortgage payments. These are payments that, of course, were made to Wall Street firms that had previously brought up distressed mortgages. Tens of thousands have not made payments for months. Some 90,000 borrowers became delinquent as a consequence of Hurricane Maria. So the vast majority of people who are delinquent is because of Hurricane Maria. So you would imagine, oh, well, I'm sure banks have suspended payments and will do so until we get back to some sense of normalcy. However, they've just extended it, I think, until 2018, which of course is in a matter of weeks. More than 100,000 people are believed to have left the island to go live with family and friends on the mainland. There was a federal government temporary moratorium on foreclosures, but that will expire, like I said, in early 18. Lenders have agreed, or at least some, have agreed to waive payments during that time. But again, back in early 2018, that they will start insisting on more payments. So just understand that the disaster, it's a rolling disaster. A rolling disaster in Puerto Rico. And of course, you've got these companies that are offering anything from, you know, remember, when these mortgage servicers put a home into foreclosure, we know this from David Dayan's work, they make money off it. They keep making fees. So they're not, when they've already bought these properties, they were distressed properties to begin with, distressed mortgages. So they're on the hook for a lot less. And then you've got people making fees. You even have a situation with the reverse mortgages. Apparently, particularly in Puerto Rico, a lot of these reverse mortgages are guaranteed by a federal insurance fund. So take, for instance, Finance of America Reverse.
It's a Blackstone Group company. They offer a reverse mortgage. It's guaranteed by the federal government. If you're older than 62 years old, you can basically, you're selling off your house in some way. You have equity in a home. I don't know. Let's just pick a number. You have $100,000 worth of equity in a home. Each month, the reverse mortgage will send you some cash, basically a loan against that equity. When you die, you got to pay off the loan and the interest. There are 10,000 reverse mortgages in Puerto Rico. Finance of America controls about 40% of the market. There's an insurance fund that guarantees the lender will be repaid on a reverse mortgage, which is also, contemplate this for a moment. You get to charge a VIG on money that you loan people. Why? Because theoretically, there's a risk that some of these people you loan the money to are not going to pay you back. That's the theory, right? We get to charge interest because we're risking the loaning of this money. But the federal government has stepped in and said, we're going to guarantee you get paid no matter what. So basically, it's another situation where it's like, because I have money, I'm going to charge this interest and I'm going to experience no risk whatsoever of any potential losses. On top of that, if Finance of America sells a foreclosed home for less than the value of the mortgage, the firm can make a claim to the insurance fund to make up the difference. So you have taxpayers on the hook for all of this. But we're not giving the money to the people who are in distress. We're giving money to the people who are essentially victimizing the people who are in distress.
Or as Republicans call it, a win-win.
Well, yes, but it's also very similar, frankly, to the way the Obama administration handled the foreclosure crisis or the budding foreclosure crisis in 2008. So, you know, that's why I think
Wall Street,
David Dayen sort of implied that he was going down there maybe to do some more work on this, because it's another, it's the same story again, slightly different, slightly modified. All right. Meanwhile, as we head into 2018, well, let me take one more phone call and then we'll talk about the other story that I think we're going to see blossom a little bit. You calling from a 405 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Yes. Hey, it's me, Gregory.
Oh, hi, Gregory. Where are you calling from?
We're calling from Oklahoma.
Gregory from Oklahoma, what's on your mind?
Two things. Last night I got into a car wreck, and I'm okay.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was the car that my mom was brought to the hospital in whenever she had me.
Oh, gosh.
And my first, and it was my first car that I had in high school. And, yeah, a lot of sentimental value.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Gone. Thanks. Second thing I wanted to talk about was in Oklahoma, we have a special election coming up in February for a state Senate seat out in the panhandle.
Okay.
The candidate in our states, it's where in our state Senate, we only have 8 Democrats out of 48 seats.
Wow. Okay.
And we've gained 2. Recently, in the last year, and the Democrat who's running in this state Senate seat, her name is Amber Jensen, and her website is.
Hey man, you've plugged AJ. It before. Hey man.
Okay,
man.
Wait, hold on. Let him just say the website.
No, this then is a different.
Okay, so Amber Jensen, what's her website?
AJ for OK.
AJ for OK. All right. Well, Gregory, I appreciate it. Yep. I got to jump, but I do appreciate it. AJ for OK is the website address. Calling from a 978 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, man.
Okay, wait,
hold on. Hello? Hello? Are you okay?
Oh, hi. Are you actually taking my call?
I think so. Who is this?
Oh, this is, my name is Shay.
Hi, Shay. Where are you calling from? Turn down your other device, if you could.
Oh, sorry. I'm calling from Lawrence, Mass.
All right. Lawrence, Mass. What's on your mind, Shay?
Okay, so the gist of my question was, okay, so let me just give me a moment. I'm sorry. I'm just so nervous.
You don't have to be nervous. Everything's going to be fine.
Okay, so I guess the gist of my question is, I guess it just sort of blows my mind that that people didn't really see Trump's resurgence coming. And anyone who's really been paying attention to, like, what's been happening in, like, Wisconsin with Scott Walker and, like, unions and him gutting, a bunch of teacher unions and whatnot. So I guess my ultimate question was, how can the Dems sort of fight this culture war that's happening in all these Midwest states with, you know, with Scott Walker doing all these things like drug testing for welfare and how do the Dems effectively just block this culture war agenda, I guess, is my question.
Well, I mean, I'll answer your question and let you go. It's a good question. I mean, I think, look, it's not a culture war agenda. I mean, it's a political assault. And I think what needs to happen is there needs to be 365 year in, year out organizing that is going on in these states, whether it's, you know, Democratic Party or other organizations. There needs to be ongoing organizing that is taking place. And there also then needs to be, for these candidates, they need to have an affirmative program that is going to materially impact people's lives for the better. And, you know, what was it that Denica Rome in Virginia? I mean, like, these are all different examples. She had on her campaign signs, you know, something like Route 128 or whatever it was. Route 28's got to be fixed. Not 128. I know, Lawrence, I know it's up in your neighborhood. But Route 28's got to be fixed. Which probably does need to be fixed. But the point being that she focused on something that she knew was bothering her constituents. That's something that she could actually address. And depending on what office you're running for, these things need to be addressed. But there needs to be ongoing organizing on the ground to maintain, because we're not going to be in this moment of sort of hypervigilance about going out to vote forever, I think. I mean, it would be nice if we were, because you'd see a lot more stuff like Alabama and Virginia. But people need a reason to go out. And right now, the reason is Donald Trump is a nightmare. But that nightmare needs to be explained and fleshed out for people so that they realize it's not just Donald Trump. It's a much broader nightmare.
Yeah, I would only add that I think the culture war stuff tends to go away a little bit when people have material interests to vote for, like you just said with the example of Danica Rome. I mean, when they don't have anyone who's servicing their material interests, I think that's where their cultural ideology comes out more.
And if there's a vacuum, it's going to get filled with something. That's the bottom line. Wyatt Carr. Oh, okay. Hey, girls, it's Wyatt. I wanted to invite all the MR bitches to come over to my New Year's yacht party in Monaco. Isn't that exciting? We're going to have Daryl Hall, Tom Selleck, and 11 cases of Little Debbie snacks. Be sure to reserve your helicopter parking soon. Wear your favorite Hawaiian shirt. All right, let me explain what this is about. Because I wasn't going to talk about this because I, you know, like, this is like one of those gossip stories that I don't really care about.
Are you serious?
I honestly wasn't
this
going to.
This is a perfect filter into wrong with our world.
This was before Sam saw the
video. This is before I saw the video. Because, I mean, look, people get engaged, then they break up their engagement. They want their engagement ring back. You see this across the income spectrum, right? The dollars that we're talking about. Oh, we should also say, now this poor guy, Wyatt Coke, he thought for a while that he may not have to pay any taxes on the billions of dollars that his dad was going to give him.
Why should he?
But now it turns out he's going to have to pay 40% taxes on the billions after $22 million. He's going to have to pay. So, you know, he may end up with just a couple billion instead of like $4 billion. Or may he just may end up with like $5 billion instead of like $9
billion. It's to the impoverishment of the fashion world.
It's sad. So this guy, Wyatt, he's suing his ex-fiance to get back an 8.24 carat ring after she broke off their engagement. I have no sense of how big of a ring it is, but apparently it cost at least $180,000, so I get a sense it's a big diamond. Wyatt's lawyers now say the ring is worth $250,000. I guess maybe it was a lot. It was March. It's gone up that much since March.
The whole story could
now be true. I feel like it's probably worth even more, because if I had that kind of money, I would buy it from her just to say, like, to him, I got it. But Wyatt also wants $15,000 in damages. So they're not getting the ring back. But here's the thing about Wyatt. Apparently, Wyatt is a businessman. You know, he's not one of these guys who's just sitting on his laurels with all his money. He's going out. He's trying to create jobs, probably in a sweatshop overseas. But nevertheless, and he's doing it by he has a brand of clothing that is something that you really got to see to believe. It's really great. Now, what is this video?
It's like a promotional video.
He put it out on Instagram.
He put it on Instagram.
You know, he's just trying to show you the life, man.
Here's one of the things that the kids are doing, right? Like, when you got a brand, a clothing brand, you got to show the lifestyle that's involved in it. Because you're not just selling the clothes. You're selling a lifestyle. You're selling a way of life.
This is what his dad told him. You're not just selling stupid clothes. You're selling a goddamn lifestyle, you little bastard.
And here he is.
Cut you off your supply and shoot you in the back of the shed like we did with your unknown other brothers that we murdered. The public doesn't even know about.
Here is Wyatt Coke sharing the lifestyle that could be yours with just his Coke attire.
My father said to me, Wyatt, you can do whatever you want to in life, but just make sure you do it well and you do it with passion.
Pause it for 1 second. Now, of course, the reason why Wyatt could do whatever he wants in life is because you're a billionaire, Wyatt. You were born, the moment you were born, you never had to think about money, so you can do whatever you want to do. The important thing is that you you have a passion about it. And he says, oh, you mean so I can completely fail at a whole series of things and the implications of it are absolutely nil? That's right, son. That's
right. In life, but just make sure you do it well and you do it with passion. Every day I go to the office, I enjoy creating the clothes. Be bold means to
pause
me,
it for 1 second. Look like how he forces everybody in the company to wear these horrible shirts, too. Everybody has to wear the shirts.
That would be part of the interview process. My one stipulation is I don't wear any of the merchandise.
I want to make it absolutely clear. I don't have to make a dollar on this, but I want to look around my boardroom and I want to see everybody wearing my shirts. Go!
Bold means to me, be authentic, be real, be yourself.
Hold on, pause it. Wait a second. Go back to the interview. What is on his shirts? It's bags of money.
He's being authentic and real to himself.
Money. That's bags of money he has on his shirts with like green dollar bills falling off.
He's being authentic and real to himself. Okay. He's a little bloated trust fund baby.
Be authentic, be real, be yourself, be confident, and always be a gentleman.
Pause it. There you can see he's actually drawing his own thing. Oh, and there he's got a shirt
that?
With handcuffs on there.
You know, that's the Koch brother criminal justice.
Let me just correct. Yeah, exactly. Let me just correct Michael. He's not a trust fund baby. He doesn't need a trust fund. He has all the cash right on his. He doesn't have to wait for anything. He's not put away.
He's an allowance baby.
Right. Yeah, he's just extremely wealthy. And look at that. Look at that. He's sitting there. I wonder if. It's funny.
That guy really knows how to hold a pen.
You know, I'll tell you something. This is exactly what Saul does every day after school. Like, we'll draw like an outline of something and he can color it in. And
it was about fourth grade where I started redoing all the NFL uniforms in my notebook.
Dude, too bad your dad wasn't a billionaire.
Yeah, your dad could have gone down the stairs and be like, look, as long as you're not gay or something, we don't have to murder you. We can subsidize your fantasy life for your whole life, young man.
Let's see.
And always be a gentleman. but still have that tenacity that no one can take away from you. I want my shirts to be able to...
he's sitting in the restaurant and the tenacity. Do we have any clips of him being tenacious? Yeah, let's slow down some footage where he's actually gesticulating. He's just waving like some type of like... Renaissance figure, like, you know, he's bringing in the grapes or something into the
that's some great AP talking.
Next course, please.
I want my shirts to be able to be worn in the boardroom or in a discoteca or a nightclub or on a yacht. I really wanted to create something that's fun, outside the box, cool, trendy, yet really bold and interesting.
Oh, there he's doing it again. He's got that whole thing going with his arms. Be bold.
I can't believe that guy is single.
Well, I mean, would you settle down? I mean, if you had that
That's right. Well, it's also a great test, actually. They were like, of like, money can purchase anything. And you can imagine like a woman being like, all right, you know what? He's a sort of vaguely nice guy. I guess if you can get him out of his money bags and half cuff shirt, maybe he'll look like semi-presentable and slightly less inbred. And then after a couple of months of doing that, it's like, you know what? The money just isn't worth it.
No, once you've been on a yacht once, what's the point?
I take it back about what I've said about how bad inequality is, because if this is the entertainment value that comes from it, I don't know.
Right.
Rebalance it.
You know, I did notice one thing in the clip where he is waving his hand and there's that model, because you could see they've just hired like just completely like the most generic casting call. We just need beautiful looking people all around him. She is like, there is this quality where she's sort of leaning away.
She's literally
sort of like it almost
moving
looks like she's getting
her body
like,
away from
like
him.
Feel creepy things on her body.
She's
being
moving
in
her body
video.
Away from him.
Maybe he could make a deal with Mike Cernovich. I bet those shirts go great with red pants.
Oh my gosh,
those look very Cernovichy.
Those are
they look like
style.
The line you'd give to like coked up South Florida magicians.
All right,
but they would still even know that it was ridiculous. Like, they'd sober up at some point. That guy's crazy from all the coke he hasn't done.
Money
is dangerous
so
for your mental health, apparently. And the Koch brothers have dedicated their entire life and their whole spending structure to make you, more than likely, if you're listening to or watching this, like, more impoverished and suffering just so they can help their useless fucking kid.
You know, at least they're creating some great art out of all those ill-gotten gains.
I wonder how much those shirts go for. I bet you they're like $5,000 a shirt or something. Because you're just selling them to, like, it looks great on the yacht. You've immediately narrowed your market, I would think. I don't know how many yachts there are.
Yeah, the boardroom and the yacht.
Yeah. $100. Like, oh, I'm going to walk into a boardroom wearing that. You know who walks into a boardroom wearing that? Only the guy who's the CEO of the company that makes that.
Or his son.
Right.
Who created his
own... Dad, yeah, I'm here. Yeah. Hey, I just wanted to check in with all the board of directors. Anybody want one of these shirts? I got a box right here. I'll sell these suckers. Oh, my God. Calling from a 413 area code. Who's this?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can. Who's this?
Oh, fabulous. This is Rachel, and I am temporarily in Queens.
Hi, Rachel. Well, what's on your mind?
Actually, I just want to know if you all caught up the latest kerfuffle with the great Family Palin up in Alaska. Basically, the headline that Sarah Palin's son, Trek, has been charged with beating up his father after confronting him with a gun. My pet theory is that people are just giddy over this because I think they're really just excited to celebrate the Palin family fuck-ups as a substitution for Trump family fuck-ups because it's not really so accessible. But I guess what really caught my eye more is just how much I've seen just the phrase white trash just flashed all over the internet. I mean, pardon my French, but I honestly can't be fucked with the Palins themselves, and they're making a proper killing off their dumpster fire existence. But I guess my issue is just thinking about how millions of Americans that are trapped in a vicious cycle of rural poverty with no opportunities for mobility, fall prey to mental illness, but get no health care, just easy access to weapons, and I think so much of like Democratic Party and their social media outlets just think how great that it's just fun to mock these disenfranchised people just because they're white.
Yeah,
particularly like Alaska and other places. How like if you did that to other Native Americans and anyone else in the same situation, like it's just not a thing. Like
I think. Let me say this. Let me say this. Mm-hmm. I think that if there was a Native American version of Sarah Palin, okay, which mm-hmm. which is, I think on maybe on some level sort of hard to imagine that someone mm-hmm. would. But it's possible, I guess, that you probably wouldn't be seeing people sort of pile on this person in such a manner. But I mean, I think like, look, all the things you're saying are true. But I think they would be more true if we were talking about people who hadn't literally been running a grift on the country.
I'm not defending her and her family at all. I'm just saying they, by default, kind of make things that much harder for people that might be in like a roughly same social demographic of them, but completely different economically, that they're just kind of burning the bridges behind them for other people in, I don't know, so-called coastal media minds and trying to figuring out how to disengage that way. And I guess, and both on like, I would argue on like a political sense in terms of earning votes in ways that, you know, Bernie has really done quite well at, but rather few Democrats have kind of created in crossing in like an economic area.
I know what you're saying.
Where do you go with that?
All right, let me just see if I understand what you're saying. So the reaction online that you've seen to the story mm-hmm. of the Palins, you think is mm-hmm. Unnecessarily targeting them, using things like I'm not sure I understand.
I don't care about the Palins,
and I'm not even following it that much because
there's so much of the rhetoric is it's the kind of thing that a lot of people will just sort of just transfer it rather directly onto people that don't have the privilege that they do. And I could say them and a lot of conservatives that just kind of have taken over the mantle of rural culture and so forth, even though they have absolutely nothing in common with their constituents who really are suffering and just trying to figure out how to break out of that vicious cycle, which a lot of so-called coastal elites, I think, tell us me basically just kind of find some sick pleasure in indulging in as well. Just kind of how do we step back from this?
The way I deal with it is I just don't engage in it in that way. I don't think it's particularly mm-hmm. meaningful one way or another. I think there is some mm-hmm. of that, you know, I think. But you know, the time to have been critical of Sarah Palin was when she was, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. actively hurting the country. I would rather those people yeah. expend their time saying, you know, John McCain, I guess now, you know, he's probably dying. So people, it's probably doesn't have the same sure. value, but I think, mm-hmm. you know,
I mean, she's just one example of many people that have kind of tried to commandeer a demographic that is not theirs.
Well, I'm not sure that it's for Sarah Palin yeah. from culturally that it's any different, but I just think that what she did, she's, mm-hmm. she's, I just don't think she's a good person. And I think, you know, like, I mean, that's basically it. I appreciate
the comment.
I get
what the caller is saying.
I appreciate the call. What?
I think when we are punching up at these horrible people who control everything and count as elites, we got to be careful about also punching down at people who have nothing to do with them. Like, it's the same argument when people like engage in fat shaming about Donald Trump or whatever. Like, there are a lot of fat people out there who are not Donald Trump
right.
and don't really deserve to be targeted in that way.
Right. Focus more on the complete lack of values that this family has in terms of their fellow humans, rather than the fact that they would, it's not appropriate for anybody to
approach your family members with a gun. There shouldn't be access to a gun in that situation, or, you know, you should only take it out if you're going out, you know, to hunt a poor defenseless animal up there, I guess. But I, you know, I mean, I haven't seen what's going on. I guess trailer trash, I think, is probably wrong. These guys don't live in a trailer. They have actually carted off a huge amount of cash on the broader emptiness of our culture, I guess.
There's a laziness of kind of, more broadly, of like a certain type of kind of like liberal, like Alabama sort of thing, which I don't think is helpful.
Yeah, there are many more important things to hate the Palins for.
And it also shows, it does show a certain classism, and it also just, it's just not a good look, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think it's why Trump won. Let me put it that way.
We can acknowledge that there's validity in a lot of these points in and of themselves without inflating them as an explanatory cause, right?
Well, like, that's
we can
what I'm
do
saying.
Do both of those things.
Like,
at
I
once.
Don't think, you know, it has anything to do with Democrats or politics on some level. You know, the people are going to vote for who they vote for. I think people who are going to be like, they were, you know, saying white trash about Palin, and so I'm not going to vote for, you know, that Doug Jones, Nancy Pelosi guy. You know, like, I'd say, you know, I'm sorry.
Well, there are a lot of people out there who voted for Trump to piss off coastal elites.
Yeah, that's a really dumb thing to do.
I'm just saying, if you're trying to build a coalition to take back power, maybe consider pissing off those people less with
it's a it's totally
like
a dumb
I,
thing. It's
I,
totally
but let
a
me
dumb
put it
thing
this way.
Do,
I just think that, like, what is it that you think that the coastal elites, of which we're probably all of these, what is it that
Speak
we could
yourself.
Do? What is it that we could do? Now, Bates is still a pretty good school. Didn't you go to Bates?
Oh, Bates is much higher ranked okay. than Conn College. I
well,
just
there
come
you go.
From an actual background.
Oh, well, I'm sorry.
You know,
but
I've
I mean,
sort of
Bates puts
not a
you
lawyer's
into.
Son.
Okay. Well, those of us who have made become cultural elites by
their own
narrative, which, rather than those of us who had no choice
born
in the matter.
Into it.
Right.
Yes.
Some of us That's are forced correct. Into it. Some of us actually chose to be cultural
Ooh,
elites. So, but
very
be that as
it may,
be that as
there,
it may I mean, if that's what you wanted
good.
To do. But be that as it may, like, what is it that cultural elites could do?
I actually do.
Could, hold on, wait, let me finish this.
I have an
finish.
Answer, though. I have an answer.
Well, I haven't even let me finish the question. I'm asking Jamie. What is it that you feel that we could do as cultural elites that would get them to vote for, let's say, in this race, Hillary Clinton as opposed to Donald Trump?
I would start with a broad class-based social program that's going to help everybody.
Well, we have literally a broad-based
focus on
program
on that
here.
And less saying, on this kind of bourgeois morality that Hillary Clinton leans so heavily on.
No, but I'm saying that as cultural elites, we're on Twitter or whatever it is that we're doing. You know, Hillary Clinton
I,
was.
Can
I'm just saying,
take
like
a stab at this.
Well, but wait, I'm talking about this in this instance where we're talking about that the notion that somehow the cultural elite are somehow because they look down upon you know or there's some disdain culturally of you know people who are going to have who you know like the Palins who hit that profile. What is it that we can do? I mean, I agree, obviously, from a political standpoint, but where are these people who are so convincible?
I think that there's no. I mean, we've already sort of gone over this like a million times. It's sort of like, you know, there is. It could be as small as a million people. It could be as small as a couple hundred thousand people who made up differential margins in those swing states, if that's what we want to narrow it down to. And there's both the more substantive, bigger thing, which I think does affect media communication. Because if I'm primarily going out and talking about, you know, I don't care if you don't have like you know, an identity that I might not be, you know, that isn't sort of valorized where I come from or whatever. But it's very important to me that you have health care. Yes, that is a much better place of starting a conversation from. And secondly, I do think, and I think it's relatively marginal, but I think we are in a situation where margins matter, that a certain type of humor and a certain type of kind of like Bill Maher overtime shtick isn't helpful. And if that is actually affects two people, well, we just had a one vote margin in Virginia. So why the hell not do that?
Right. I know. Understand that. But I've been like Bill Maher, he's a performer. He's just out there making money. And, you know, Sean Hannity is going to interpret whatever Bill Maher says. And if it's not Bill Maher, then it's somebody else and is going to stoke this. I just think that the idea of that the backlash against the cultural, you know, the cultural elite is, I think that's just overstated. I think that I think that some of this stuff with those folks is predetermined. I'm not talking about what should be a political program or whatnot, but I remember going down to a Sarah Palin rally in New York City, oddly enough, and you know, people, the older women, there was an older woman who was saying, like, you know, Saul Alinsky sent you down here. And I'm like, you know more about Saul Alinsky than I do.
Yeah, a lot of those people are idiots, but I think that there's no contradiction in the fact that we have what we have control over. If I was to stipulate that you're 97% right, certainly about the Republican base, we still have the power to choose to indulge in certain.
I don't do that. Right.
We don't do that, as a matter of fact. And you don't do that.
No,
and I appreciate that.
I don't do that.
So I think it's kind of
simple.
It's
a waste of time.
Yeah.
But I'm also not convinced that it you know, that it has the implications. I think there is a significant portion of people in this country who the return on investment in trying to convince them, particularly on cultural level, of certain things, directly anyways, is a waste of effort.
It's like my friend Luke just did major progress to expand Medicaid in Idaho, right? And he started doing, he's an academic, but he spends part of his time back home where he grew up in Idaho. And his group, first they saved.
An academic.
Yeah, no, exactly. He's from Idaho, and he is a self-created cultural elite, exactly. Mm. But he went back to Idaho, and the first thing they did was saved a local school funding initiative from like a Tea Party group to essentially drain the local school of funding. They saved the school's funding, and now they're more broadly pushing for Medicaid expansion, and they just had a major advancement with that. And he definitely told me, he's like, look, it's something certainly that I say all the time, and I think we say this broadly. He's like, if you go door to door, yeah, you will hear some really disgusting cultural attitudes. And then there's some people that are totally gone and there's unpersuadable.
Right.
And there's some people that are bad. But frankly, when you say everybody should have Medicaid, they're excited to sign the petition. It's just a better point of attack.
Right.
Maybe don't call them deplorables.
Some of them. Colin from a 401. We should call. Yes. Well, a candidate shouldn't. Makes sense. Calling from a 415 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah. Who's this?
Oh, great. This is Amy from San Francisco.
Hello, Amy from San Francisco.
Yes. I'm the one who used to work at the comedy club, and Dennis Miller didn't tip.
Oh,
he was really a horrible person. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
But I wanted to talk to you. What?
I'm glad to hear that. I mean, I'm sorry you didn't get a tip, but I'm glad that I haven't spent all this time, you know, mocking Dennis Miller to find out, like, oh, he's a really sweet guy when you meet him in person. Very
no,
kind.
He was a terrible human.
What are you going to do with your tip? Bop, bop, bop. I want a Stannis report on your salary.
How's your nephew? I heard he hurt his leg. Let me go visit him in the hospital. Can I sign his cast? Good, good.
Ew. Compassionate Dennis Miller. Yeah. I remember you. You're a very good person. How can I be helpful?
I actually called about something serious, though.
Okay.
So you've had a couple calls from veterans recently.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're really struggling. I actually work with veterans. And you really have to get Suzanne Gordon on to talk about what's going on with the VA. She's written several books. She's published in, she's written a lot of articles. Just Google her. But basically, the VA, despite its problems, is a really, you know, well-functioning social deliverer of not only medical care, but housing and voc rehab and all kinds of things like that. And what's been going on is this real charge to privatize it.
Uh-huh.
And the Koch brothers have funded an organization called Concerned Veterans of America to the tune of millions and millions and millions of dollars. Shulkin, unfortunately, seems to be looking at his next job in the private industry where he's going to make, you know, a six-figure income. And they're starving the VA. So the choice dollars, if a veteran chooses to use the choice dollars, that gets pulled out from the hospital budgets.
Right.
And it's, so then
it's like vouchers for schools, right?
Exactly. And you know, it's really horrifying for you know, when I see our clients and the kind of care that they've gotten, you know, that is absolutely unavailable in the private market. I mean, especially when you talk about people who are extremely vulnerable, multiple comorbidities, drug treatment, housing, case management, a burgeoning aging population of veterans from the Vietnam War who are aged far beyond their physical years. So I really suggest that you have Suzanne Gordon on. She's really the expert on it. She's also a nurse. And
this is a classic. This seems to me to be very analogous to public schools, where you're setting up
Absolutely.
A system where there's no profit to be made because you're dealing with people who are very challenged circumstances, and then others can peel off, use their money in private enterprise, and these facilities begin to lose their funding. And yeah, I mean, it's sort of a classic case.
Yeah.
We'll do that. I appreciate the call. Yeah. I really do appreciate it.
Okay, great. And happy holidays, everybody.
Thank you, too.
Love your show. Listen every day. Love you all. Happy New Year.
Thanks, you too. Thanks for the call. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break and head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will have more fun. That is the way it goes. I've already begun being fun. We're going to be even funner in just a moment. Remember, your support makes this show possible. You can go to jointhemajorityreport.com to become a member. Check out our new site. It is still a work in progress. For those of you who are upset that your beta testers, sorry. but for the most part, I think we're at like 75%, 80% functionality. And look, you know, it is a complicated thing to have both a live show and a podcast website, and to do it on a non-Koch Brothers budget. So bear with us. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Don't forget, subscribe to TMBS on iTunes or wherever your podcasts are served. Quick break, 646-257-3920. We'll be right back after this.